When I was thinking about what to say this morning to the conference, I thought the best thing to say would perhaps just to give you some sense of my own journey into the whole very complex world of human rights. I can remember the night that the Good Friday Agreement was signed, '98. I was coming out of a cinema in North Belfast with a friend, and I turned the radio on, and I heard all the commotion up at Stormont, and I knew that I just had to go up there and to see what was going on. And it was very exciting for me. You know, different political parties were holding press conferences on the grounds of Stormont Estate. Other political parties were hacking them as they did so. And there just seemed to be a whole sense of anticipation, excitement, no doubt perhaps fear for some people. And in the days and months that followed that, and I mean, most of you in this room will remember those days, I think Northern Ireland went through a real period of optimism. At least I think it was optimistic, certainly where I was coming from. There was optimism. I can remember, you know, the taxis going up and down the falls with the tricolours, and I can remember, you know, people on the Shankill coming out, and I can remember all the press conferences and all of that. And for me, it came perhaps about 5 years too late. My wife, and most of you will know this, was murdered in the Troubles in 1993 in the Shankill bomb. And I went through a period myself of being angry, of taking placards and standing outside Sinn Féin offices and of chasing Gerry Adams halfway around the world to Washington, Boston, New York, confronting him at Dublin Airport, and really trying to make people aware of the situation that had existed in Northern Ireland and, in my view, right up to 98 and perhaps even arguably so today, still exists in relation to sectarianism, to mistrust, to bigotry, and also as well to paramilitary control in some of our streets. And for me, the Good Friday Agreement, why it was such a watershed in Northern Irish society was that it was a real breakthrough. It was the first time in my lifetime that we had an agreement that seemed to reach out to all the players, and they all came in from the cold, and they sat around the table, and with the exclusion of a few, they agreed this thing which we now call the Good Friday Agreement. And for me, why I was excited and why I certainly was very much to the forefront of the campaign trying to advocate for a yes vote was that it was going to be a society which is going to be based on equality and which had a respect for human rights right at its core. 16 or 17 years on from the Good Friday Agreement and the fact that that some of those things have yet to be realised, for me, is a measure of real sadness in terms of the society and where we have come. I think human rights in this society, for me, are things that most of us take for granted. And it's only really until you've had your human rights taken away or you've had to fight for them or they've been abused that you realise just how precious they are. But essentially, they're around freedom and choice. Freedom to get a job, to choose a partner of your own choice, to raise children, to have an education, to have an adequate standard of living, to have a home, to be able to be all that you want to be and to be able to live your life without intimidation or harassment or sectarian violence. I think the Good Friday Agreement has delivered a lot for Northern Ireland. I think it's great to see former enemies sharing power. I certainly never thought in my lifetime that I would ever see Martin McGuinness and the late Ian Paisley sit down together and talk about anything, let alone how this province should be governed. And yet I think in those days they seemed to do it relatively well. There's certainly been a reduction in the level of violence on our streets. There's certainly not the same numbers of people being killed. There's not the same number of explosions. That's not to say it hasn't totally gone away. And we all know, very much to the detriment of Northern Ireland, that some of those things still happen today. But they don't quite happen in the same scale. And you only have to walk into Belfast city centre on any evening to see how much the city's been transformed. I can remember when I was a young boy going into the city centre and having to be searched before you go through the gates in Royal Avenue, and how you had to get searched when you went into each shop. And it wasn't sometimes until you went away on holiday that you realised how abnormal the society was, that actually they don't do that in other countries, but we did it here because of the fear of bombs and shootings and killings. But for me, you know, whilst that's all true, and those things are no longer with us today, thank God, it's really a story of two halves. I tell this story a few years ago. I happened to be in Washington, actually with some members of the consortium who have partly organized today. And I was standing with Aidan Gilmore, and we were watching a DVD which the Invest Northern Ireland or something had made to try and encourage inward investment into Northern Ireland, something that we all need, of course. And there was this DVD of, you know, Belfast on a particularly nice sunny day. There was people outside the Crown Bar from all nationalities having a drink. I think there was interviews from some of our golfers, Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell. There were stallions galloping across Port Stewart Strand. There was the Titanic Centre was being built. The MTV Awards had come. There was big parties outside Belfast City Hall. And it really looked like a fantastic place to go on holiday. And it's not that I didn't recognise or didn't, you know, realise that this was my city, this was my country, this was the place where I grew up. I recognised some of those things. Of course I did, but it was only half the story. About 3 weeks after I came home from Washington, I happened to be at the wake house of a young man in Ardoyne called Mickey Kearns. Mickey Kearns was the second person in his family to have taken his own life. Barney Kearns hung himself from Holy Cross Chapel just about 7 years previous. And you probably remember the story. I think it was about maybe six or seven people in Ardoyne that took their lives over a six-month period. Northern Ireland has twice the national average of young men that take their own lives within the UK. And I think for me, that is also part of the Northern Irish story. I'm not saying that that's all part of the fallout of the Good Friday Agreement, but there, for me, there is something around young people taking their own lives, which is about the absence of hope, the absence of aspiration, the absence of getting a job, of having an adequate standard of living, of actually making your way in life. The things, as I said earlier, most of us take for granted. For me, human rights are universal. I think it's fantastic that this conference today is getting back to basics for me. It's looking at the human being in human rights. And for me, if there only ever was one human right that should be universally respected, it would have to be Article 1. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They're endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Obviously, it was a victim of its time, written in 1948, and if it was written today, perhaps it would have added sisterhood into that. But nonetheless, it is still there, and I still think it is something that we need to aspire to, because for me, it's not just about human rights, it's also about human responsibilities, and I think those two have to go hand in hand. Essentially, all human rights treaties have their origins in this one human right, equality and dignity, but they have to be felt equally across society. It's my sense that we have distanced human rights from human beings, and in particular, those living in disadvantaged areas. I remember about a year ago, I was with the Human Rights Commission going to Palestine, and I brought some reading material for the plane. I normally buy a newspaper and read the sport, but I thought, given that I was going to a human rights conference, I better read something about human rights. So I actually read the autobiography of Eleanor Roosevelt, and there's that very famous quote that Eleanor Roosevelt said about, for human rights to have meaning, they have to have meaning in small places, like farms and factories and schoolyards and churches, and that if they don't have meaning there, they don't have meaning anywhere. Well, in Northern Irish speak, I suppose that's for me, you know, that if human rights are going to have meaning, they have to have meaning in places like Lower Shankill, like Ardoyne, like Turf Lodge, like Andytown, like some of the communities that we so often associate with disadvantage in this society. I think the Good Friday Agreement gave us a real opportunity to try and put some of those things into practice. But for me, it's very much about unfinished business. I suppose I have two great causes in my life which I've been dedicating myself to for the last 20 years. And those have been to try and come up with a mechanism that sophisticatedly deals with the past in Northern Ireland, and also to try and advance the cause for a Bill of Rights. And if I can just finish with a plea, no doubt to the converted, around a Bill of Rights for Northern Ireland. The issue for me about a Bill of Rights for Northern Ireland is not about having more legislation here to protect people's human rights. Because when I think about it, you know, with the Human Rights Act, the Universal Declaration, the European Convention, and the various treaties that have been set up, it's difficult for me to see how we could have more legislation that would yet protect human rights. So for me, it wasn't about having more legislation and more protections. It was about that issue that I highlighted earlier in my talk, about trying to bring human rights back to the people. Because the Northern Irish Bill of Rights, I would have thought, should have been Northern Irish specific. It could have dealt with the issues that we deal with here every day in our lives. It would have been something that this society, in my view, should have been built upon. It should have been a very cornerstone of our society. It should be something that we should be shouting from the rafters about. It should be taught in schools, and our kids should learn about it from a very early age. And when you think about it, is there a case or an issue in Northern Ireland which essentially is not about rights and responsibilities? I can remember when we were having conversations years ago, many, many years ago, around the Bill of Rights, and it just, for me, just shows you how long ago, really, we've been talking about this and the fact that so little progress has really been made on it. But I can remember having conversations in the Wave Trauma Centre with young people whose loved ones, mostly their parents, a father, was murdered by the Troubles, both Catholic and Protestant, loyalist and Republican, unionist and nationalist. And I remember one unionist kid whose father actually happened to be a member of the Orange Order say, "Alan, I want to have the right in my daddy's memory for the Orange men to walk wherever they want because it's a free country, it's a free society, and I think that's our human right." And this other young fella who got up whose father was murdered by loyalists said, "Well, I respect your human right, but I don't want you bringing your Orange March down my area and starting to goad my family because my father was murdered by you, by your crowd." And in that conversation that followed, there for me was just in a very small, brief conversation between two young people, the conflict that you have around human rights in this society, the right to march, the right to parade, but also the moral responsibility to not rub your neighbours' faces in it. If this society is totally about a shared future and totally about making progress and for Catholics and Protestants, nationalists and unionists actually relating to one another, we cannot no longer live like this. Unionists should not be described as bastards. And people poking fun at the Irish language should use nothing along the lines of curry my yogurt or whatever else defamatory language is used. This society has to get beyond this. And for me, having a refocus on human rights and human responsibilities has to be part of the discourse. Thank you.